This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Mike O'Neill here with Mike Russell, and we are going to talk about two kinds of political issues today. There are two kinds. There's the one kind that's very easily understood by everybody. We're going to talk about CPS, but that's backburnered. We're initially going to start with the kind of political issue that most people don't understand, but which can be immensely important. Specifically, House Bill 2305 was passed last year. Lori Roberts is with us. She has written extensively about this issue. Senator Michelle Reagan is on the phone. She is widely regarded as the architect of this bill. And Robbie Sherwood, if he shows up, will be here in a later segment. He objects to this bill. So first of all, let me go to Lori Roberts and ask you if you could just very quickly summarize for us, what does HB 2305 do?
Well, it was a bill that was begun by Michelle Reagan at the request of the 14 state recorders in the state, asking for a way to clean up the permanent early voting list. If you recall back to the 2012 elections, there were all sorts of problems with people voting provisional ballots because they had early ballots sent to their home and didn't use them, and it caused all sorts of trouble. So this started out as a bill aimed at cleaning up that problem before the 2014 elections. However, as time went on, more and more things were Christmas treed onto this bill, and it basically became a bill of a litany of things that everybody hated other than the Republicans. It included, for example, something to make it more difficult to file citizen initiatives and recall efforts or for them to be successful. It had, more difficult for third-party candidates to make the ballot, increasing the signature requirements in some cases by up to 400%. The signature requirements went up for everyone other than Republican candidates. And it also tossed some obstacles in the way of some of the Latino groups who had done a get-out-the-vote efforts, essentially making it more difficult for groups to turn in batches of ballots from early voters.
Okay, Michelle Reagan, as my political science 101 hat, I look through these provisions, and one of the things that strikes me, is it just coincidence, or do every one of these provisions just happen to advantage Republicans? Is that just an unanticipated byproduct, or is that by design?
Well, I'm going to say that it was an unanticipated byproduct. The parts that I actually drafted were ones that started out as a bipartisan attempt by our county recorders and our county election officials to do some things that they saw lacking in our state laws. That is like the early ballot collection. We're the only state in the country where you're allowed to collect hundreds, thousands of ballots and turn them in on election day. That there's just stuff going on in our state that's unheard of in other states. So I like to say I'm the architect of the portions that I really, really believe in, which were also roped into this bill.
Well, let me ask you about that, the provision whereby people can collect ballots and turn them in. Has there been any instance of somebody doing that in an untoward fashion?
There's been absolute instance of it, of people doing that. I'm not going to use the word untoward because what they're doing is completely legal according to our state law. But we had a gentleman in committee testify that he turned in over 4,000 ballots on election day at the polls. He was doing a community service, collecting, going door to door, making sure people were turning their ballots in. It was obviously too late for them to go back in the mail.
My question is there, was there any suggestion that somebody was doing that in a way that was adverse to the preferences of the people whose ballots they were collecting? In other words, was there any suggestion of monkeying with the system, or is he just providing a service for people who find it difficult to get to the polls?
Well, that depends on who you talk to. There was no evidence that this particular gentleman was doing any monkey business, but I would like to point out that there is a reason why every other state doesn't allow this, and that's because it opens the door for potential monkey business. So I'm not going to accuse this gentleman of anything, and we'll call him, as doing a fine civic duty. However, again, that is unheard of, that you have ballots stuffed in the trunks of cars, that you have ballots. We have photographs of ballots spread across a hotel room bedspread. What is that? That's not election integrity. And so this bill really started out as something, I would say, quite different than the big, and I would agree with Lori Roberts, the big Christmas tree that eventually ended up passing. There are some really, really good provisions in that bill that I support, I still support, and it's a shame they're not in effect in Arizona.
Let's start there. What would you regard as the most essential provision of the bill that you would like to see?
Oh, I'd like to stop the ballot collection by either individuals, groups, parties. The Republican Party, the Democrat Party, they should not be going out and collecting live ballots. Those are people's voices. There's a process that needs to be followed, and it isn't give them to the hands of party operatives. That's nuts.
Lori, would you like to weigh in on that point?
Well, I think that Michelle has a point that it is a questionable sort of thing. I think the problem becomes that the bill became considered this voter suppression effort because you add that with everything else, all of the other tenants in the bill, you put them all together, and it looks like a bill that, as you put it, advantages Republicans to the detriment of everyone
else.
Let
me go back to Senator Reagan because I know you have to leave after this segment. The House Judiciary Committee... first of all, this bill was passed. A citizens committee got together and collected 150,000 signatures to undo this. It looks like, the Judiciary Committee voted to rescind the bill, and there's a suggestion that the House is going to pass it piecemeal. And it looks to a lot of people like the attempt is to undermine a citizen vote on this. Where do you stand on that?
Where I stand, I've been very consistent on this. As much as it kills me, because I did write many provisions of this bill, I do not want to have it on a general election ballot. I find that to be frightening because there's unknown legal ramifications, and I'm not going to go into major detail except to say that we do have the Voter Protection Act in this state, and there is a question on whether whether all these statutes would then be locked if the people vote on it on a ballot. The consequences of that are so scary that I would just like to see it off the ballot. And in order to do that, I am urging my colleagues for a clean repeal, which means repeal what we did last year. There's groups that don't like it. There's, 147,000 people that signed a petition saying they had problems with it. Let's repeal it. Let's respect that. We don't introduce it piecemeal the same year. That is up to if a future legislature wants to take on this issue. And with, a whole new legislature coming in at the end of 2014, that's certainly their business, and they would have every right to do that. But this is not the year to do that. You don't go to a judge and say, hey, no need to put it on the ballot. We've repealed it. Oh, except for we repassed these two parts. I mean, that's not fair.
Okay. Michelle Reagan, State Senator, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll obviously stay on this topic all the way through the process of HB 2305. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, well, have me on anytime. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Lori Roberts continues with us right after the break. This is The Think Tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We are here with Lori Roberts. We have lost Michelle Reagan to the floor of the Arizona State Senate.
Well, that's good. We get to know things are happening, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? People are working. That's what we need to know. Right?
At the Capitol?
That's right.
Never a good thing.
Come on.
Never
all
a good
right.
thing.
All right. I got excited. They were doing something, and they weren't all lining up to get to Sochi.
Well, you reacted strongly to some of what you heard. Have at it.
Michelle says, and I believe that she really believes this, that the reason that the Republicans don't want House Bill 2305, the referendum, on the ballot in November is because they're concerned that the Voter Protection Act might kick in. Well, first of all, that demonstrates to me that they pretty much know voters are going to slap them one and reject what it was.
First of all,
they
didn't think this group would get the signatures to put it on
not.
The ballot.
Of course not. They did not.
Because that's a pretty steep requirement.
Well,
you have to really have your stuff together.
Remember, there was another referendum going on at the same time to repeal the Medicaid expansion, mm-hmm. and those people failed miserably. They got nowhere near the signatures that they needed, while this group went ahead and got them. And the Republicans are obviously very afraid that if this goes on the ballot, voters are going to deliver them a slap in the face and slap down what they did.
And of course, the whole idea of voter protection was that if the people vote on something, you don't get to monkey with it.
Well, that's true, except that I've talked to several legal scholars who deal with criminal, who deal with campaign finance laws, and they have told me that though the courts have not ruled on this issue because the Voter Protection Act is only, 14, 15, 16 years old, they believe that the Voter Protection Act protects initiatives when voters approve something. It makes it more difficult for the legislature to disapprove it. They have to have a two-thirds mm-hmm. vote. But this would not be a case of the voters approving anything. It would be a case of the voters rejecting something that the legislature did, wholly different from an initiative.
Well, this would be what the lawyers refer to as unsettled law, which means it goes to court and we don't know what the outcome is.
Right, but the attorneys that I've talked to feel fairly confident that that's a red herring.
Mm-hmm. So does anyone think this? When we were speaking to Michelle Reagan, it seemed as if the original bill was well-intended. Look, it sounded like it had bipartisan support. And then you said Christmas treed. You're talking about a lot of things added on to the bill. Wouldn't that does that happen? Why would it happen?
I'm not sure that I would characterize that bill as having bipartisan support to begin with. Steve Gallardo and some of the Democrats were screaming early on about that bill and some of the provisions. They were concerned about the way in which people's names were going to be removed from the PEVAL, I love that word, PEVAL, permanent early ballot list. They were concerned about the way that was going to work, and they were extremely concerned about this business of not allowing these groups to pick up handfuls of ballots and deliver them.
Right.
Let me just address the issue of the striking of names off of the early voting list.
PEVAL. We love
the PEVAL.
I like PEVAL. I'm going to stick with that.
Political Science 101. Republicans are higher income, higher educated, and vote more regularly. So if you apply a rule like we're going to take somebody off the list if you don't vote in a certain number of elections, it is inevitable that more Democrats than Republicans will be struck off the list.
Right.
So this has a partisan impact.
Why would you get stricken from the list?
Because you haven't voted. It is a empirical fact that's not debatable, that is more likely to be Democrats than Republicans.
Okay.
Because Republicans,
I was just asking why you got struck from the list.
Because you haven't voted in a certain number
you
of
Democrats. You would have had to vote in both the primary and general in 2014 and 2016, I believe. And if you hadn't voted in all four of those elections, then you would get one of those postcards that everybody ignores saying, gee, it looks like you didn't vote early ballot this way. Do you want to have your name taken off? And then nobody would reply. And if you don't reply, then your name is stricken from it.
And you don't get a ballot in the mail for the next election.
Right. You sit around and wait for your ballot that never comes and you end up not voting. That is the theory of Democrats. And so I would say that I think she may be a little optimistic when she's thinking she had bipartisan support for that portion.
I didn't hear the word bipartisan.
She said bipartisan.
She said bipartisan.
Correct, yes.
I don't remember that.
Well,
yeah. Whether or not she said it, I don't remember any bipartisan support.
Wait a second. If you take it to a presidential level, you can say bipartisan support. That means you had Olympia Snow on the bill. We need one Democrat, and then look, it's bipartisan. So she could have been right.
There might have been one somewhere.
Bipartisan.
What happened? That portion of the bill went through the process, had the public hearings. There was a lot of bruising, battling going on. And then the very last night of the session is when all of a sudden these other things were hung on the bill like a Christmas tree. That's what I mean by Christmas.
I like that term.
Yeah, it was in the wee waning hours of that last night of the legislative session. And the one I think that really got me was this business of, well, you know, we need to actually increase the signature requirements for third-party candidates and for Democrats because it's just not fair the way it is. Well, I looked it up, and if you were to run as a Libertarian candidate for governor, they were increasing the signature requirement by something like 4,000% or some ridiculously high number.
Right, I think I saw the list, and in one district, I think it was like six. I needed six signatures to be on the ballot. I thought that was
because
brilliant.
The current law says you need a certain percentage of the registered voters
in
the party.
I just thought this would
make it the same for Democrats, Republicans, and Libertarians, which would be
would increase the number for Democrats a little bit, but would be prohibitive
for
Libertarians.
What it comes down to is the Republicans were still steamed that they lost all three of the swing congressional districts in the 2012 elections. They were really mad about that. They felt like Libertarians had served as spoilers in that general election. For example, in Congressional District 9, Vernon Parker lost to Kyrsten Sinema by 10,000 votes. Mm-hmm. But there was a third-party candidate on the ballot, a Libertarian, and he got 16,000 votes.
Right.
So presuming that many of those votes would have gone to Parker—
So shouldn't the Democrats be celebrating the fact that they're upping their requirements to get on the signature requirements?
No, quite the opposite.
Why is that?
Upping the requirements would keep the Libertarians off the ballot.
And oh, I see where you're going now. Okay, now it makes
Libertarians
sense.
Libertarians would tend to, I mean, conventional
split
wisdom is that Libertarians would split for Republicans, while Green Party candidates, if there are any anymore ever, would go toward Democrats.
Libertarians being a much bigger influence than Green Party.
But let's go to the bulk collection by random people. This is how it seems to I think, a lot of people's mind's eyes, that there's random people running around and throwing ballots in the back of their trunks. And delivering them for people. Why are we doing this? Why is that a common practice? And I understand you said there's nobody's been convicted of monkey business. Mm-hmm. I think that was your term, of monkey business. But why would we allow that? I like what she said then when she talked about election integrity.
That's probably the most defensible. I think Laurie would. That's probably the most defensible part of the bill, and it was the original part.
Well,
right?
Latino groups are saying that is voter suppression. And I think that they have a point in that they just started this process of trying to get out new voters in, 2010, 2012. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they did this time around was go around and collect people's early ballots that had presumably already been filled out. And they simply became the post office guy that took them to the ballot thing.
The idea is that these are groups that have not historically voted very often. We're trying to make it easier for them. It's not unlike, for example, in the last election, there were a lot of blacks went to the polls, souls for the polls, voting on Sunday.
Okay.
And then in some states, they cut back on Sunday voting.
Yeah. So I think that she makes a legitimate point of, is this the kind of way that we want to run our elections? It's a little loosey-goosey. On the other hand, she's not trying to solve a problem of demonstrated fraud. Nobody's demonstrated that there was ever anything wrong with what was going on.
But there's a lot of things we can say that, nothing bad has happened yet. But I don't understand why solidifying a process would hurt.
Why don't we have enough problems in this state that we could deal with the problems we have rather than the ones we don't have?
Look, we took a lot of time passing a state gun. Okay, so we here in Arizona, we look to stuff that we want to do, not stuff that we need to do. We will get to CPS. We assure you, we're going to come right back with Lori Roberts, the Arizona rep from the Arizona Republic, right here on the Think Tank News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Mike O'Neill here with Mike Russell and columnist Lori Roberts. Subject matter, HB 2305. We interviewed Michelle Regan, the architect of the bill. One of the things I was struck in our brief interview with her was that she seemed to me to kind of back off of the notion of bringing this bill back piecemeal. Now, I understand there are others in the legislature who may have this in mind, but her position seemed rather definitive. She doesn't want to be saddled with this, perhaps, in her run for Secretary of State.
Well, when I talked to her, maybe a month or so ago, she talked about repeal this year and then coming back with some of the pieces in next year's session. Mm-hmm. Of course, she won't be there because she's running for a different office next year. Others, however, have told me, people very close to the Republican caucuses out at the legislature, that the plan was to repeal it this year and then come back with six separate and distinct bills enacting pieces of it this year, that's been the plan. Now, the person who told me that said, even as they talk about it, I question whether they'll really do it when the time comes and it becomes public. So now everybody's...
That would seem to me to be very hard, just to walk through the sequence. We pass this bill that has these six components. Citizens get together, they collect 150,000 signatures saying we don't want to do this, we want to put it up to a vote. The legislature retracts it and then puts them in as individual bills. It would seem to me that would run the risk of creating outrage.
Well, most everything the legislature does runs the risk of creating
outrage. Not everything is as blatant as this.
But it probably sounds really good when you're in the hallways in the men's bathroom and talking among yourselves in the Senate. That kind of thing may sound like a really good idea, and then
we
when
don't
it hits
talk much
of...
in the men's bathroom. We try to avoid eye contact. We try not to talk.
That's true. That's true.
Well, I haven't spent a lot of time in there, truth be told. But I will tell you that Representative Eddie Farnsworth, who is the House Judiciary Committee chairman and the author of this year's repeal bill, has been quoted by reporters as saying he wouldn't be opposed to the idea of bringing portions of it back. I believe it was Farnsworth who authored the portion that last night of last year's session to up the signature requirements for some of the candidates.
Well, it would be interesting, I would think, if Michelle Reagan stuck to her guns and opposed bringing this back piecemeal. That would make it a whole lot harder to bring it back, wouldn't it?
No. Why would it make it harder?
Well, they lose a vote, and B, they have the embarrassing situation of having the original architect of the bill opposing bringing back aspects of it.
I think that would strengthen her. I think
it would
that
strengthen
would
strengthen her.
Yeah, exactly.
It would immunize her, because I could see that being a very, because that to me is so untoward that could be a very effective issue against her running for Secretary of State. So I fully understand why she would back off, and I would think that would make it difficult for others to take up the mantle on what is, in effect, her bill.
Well, her bill is not the bill this year, though. She had a piece of that bill, but she did not have the most egregious pieces of that bill last year. People piggybacked onto her bill.
Well, let's talk about it. She indicated that she thought the most supportable aspect of this bill was the prohibition against people collecting signatures. And I got to say, I agree.
Collecting ballots, though, right?
Collecting ballots. Yeah. I don't see what the big deal is, put a stamp on it and mail it. I mean, I understand why they want to do it. These are voters who are not used to voting, and you make it, you're just trying to facilitate it. It's no big deal to you or I who vote all the time. But if you've never voted before, let's make it easier. But put a stamp on it. I mean, really.
I don't think it's a difficult thing to ask of people. I will tell you that the Latino activist groups are very upset about it and believe that it is a push by Republicans to suppress that Latino vote, which is growing in the state.
I think that's the motivation. But on the other hand, it's not a heck of a burden. I don't know that if you repealed it, would people be prohibited from taking the ballot with a stamp on it and throwing it in the post office?
Here's the deal with that, though, is I would be insulted as the Latino community. Why in any minority community, any time it seems that someone has a ballot initiative or proposes an idea that is going to require some sort of effort? No, that's it. No, there's no way Latinos will do that. There's no way the black community will do that. Well, that's insulting. I would be insulted. I would be fired up about the whole thing.
I think it's one of those things where it's a way to fire up your base.
Yeah, honestly. I would agree.
I think of much more concern is this third-party signature requirement and what they're trying to do. And the part we really haven't talked much about is the portion to make it more difficult to do.
Explain third-party signature requirement.
Oh, the signature requirement, that is where the requirement on nominating petitions, the signature requirement is upped for every group other than Republicans.
Okay. Yeah, not minor parties. I was thinking somebody to validate.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, okay. No.
I just want to be
Libertarian.
Clear. So basically, yeah, really,
it's
what
the,
this is about is keep libertarians off the ballot.
What this is about is we got to get those swing congressional districts back. And as Representative J.D. Mesnard said on the floor in explaining his vote last June on this bill, gee, if we'd had this in place, we probably would have won two of those three congressional seats.
I guess that's what comes to me. This is really an attempt to change outcomes. It's not really about process, except insofar as it may change
outcomes. And there's one other part that is a direct slap at the voters. They are trying to make it more difficult to do citizen initiatives and recalls. Now, you know, the legislature doesn't like either of those things. Number one, they did not like it when Russell Pierce was recalled. Many of them thought that was terrible.
They don't like it in general because the initiative and the recall, but also the initiative process, allows direct legislation by citizens, and it undermines their...
Yeah, and you're spending the money that they think they should be able to spend. How dare you citizens want to do that stuff? So in both cases, they're trying to make it more difficult. They're going from a legal requirement of substantial compliance. The courts in the past have said if citizens substantially comply with election rules, that's good enough since they're lay people. The legislature wants to make it a strict compliance standard.
And my understanding of that means if you sign your name with a middle initial, but the voter registration has your full middle name, your signature doesn't count, even if there's no question about who you were and what your intent was.
Or if your petitions are turned in and petitions are numbered, if you have them out of sequence, which has nothing to do with the signature and everything to do with just you numbered them wrong. Or even, I believe, down to things like how much of a margin you have on the sides of your petitions. Silly things.
It's dot every I, cross every T, way, way beyond what's a legitimate function of the courts to review this stuff to make sure that these were real people who really signed it and their intent was clear.
Exactly.
Right. It seems that there's so many things that voters would agree on that our legislators just see as vehicles for obstruction or vehicles to grease the skids for them. And it infuriates voters. Why aren't legislators listening to us versus their future benefit?
That's a long discussion, but we can start out by talking about we have gerrymandered districts to where very few people on the extreme sides of both parties are essentially electing our legislature. Mm-hmm. Most of the state, a third of the state now is independent, and most of them, the vast majority of them, I'll say 90% of them, do not vote in primaries where our legislature is chosen.
And not a single independent elected to the legislature.
No.
The rules basically put the fix in, every seat is preordained to a Democrat or a Republican.
Right, and it'll be a Republican or Democrat at the extreme ends of their party, generally
because
those are the people who vote.
Right,
and
in the primaries.
And shame on the rest of us for not.
Yeah. Amen.
That's why we have a legislature that is not really reflective of the state as a whole.
Try to convince people, the fact of the matter is, if you're only going to vote in one election, vote in your primary election. Because that's the one where the candidate is pretty much predetermined.
And when it comes to the legislature, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in statewide. Well, actually, in statewide races, too, anymore, because Republicans hold every single statewide elective position in the state now.
Yep. And this also applies in 6 out of 9 congressional seats. In the other 3, it's the November vote that matters.
True.
We have 3 competitive.
We have 3 districts that are competitive.
And thanks to the redistricting commission, we have that. That's high as a national standards to have 1 out of 3 congressional seats actually where your vote in November will count.
Yeah.
All right. Now I want to break a little bit early because I want to come back to this. I want to get to CPS. I think we've handled voting. Everybody agree? We've handled voting. Let's move to the CPS. I'm excited to talk about this when we get back. It's Doc O'Neill, Mike Russell in the think tank. KTR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We're back with Laurie Russell, columnist for the Arizona Republic, and the person who has probably over an extended period of time paid more attention to the goings-on at CPS, Child Protective Services, as anyone. Can you give us a minute background on sort of what's going on over there? Yeah, and what's not going on?
A lot of things. Well, it's been a mismanaged mess for decades. Children have died, and children have just slipped through that safety net right into their graves when CPS is supposed to be watching. Well, finally in November, CPS had to admit that their crack senior management team made a decision because they were overworked to simply not investigate 6,554 cases of potential abuse. That is 6,554 potential cries.
People who were called in, calls were made to the hotline, and there was no follow up whatsoever.
There was no nothing.
Or in some cases, wasn't there somebody that went to the residence or whatever, and then just didn't follow up?
Not even.
Really? Okay.
Not even. Based on those phone calls, some senior management person would deem the case not worthy of investigating, despite the fact that we have a state law that says you must investigate every potential report of abuse or neglect in this state. So it became a huge outcry. The governor had to respond. She created what was called the care team to go in there, triage the situation, fix it, get those 6,500 cases looked at, and then at the same time, take a look at what the heck is going on in this agency and how in the world do we fix it. So the ideas have come out. She has now split off CPS from the huge bureaucracy known as Department of Economic Security. She can't technically do that. She can't take it and make it a new state agency. Only the legislature can do that. But she has, for all intents and purposes, split it off by appointing a new person to run it and to get in there. And
which means, in effect, she's saying to that person, you report directly to me.
That's exactly right.
That's the significance of a cabinet officer.
Right. And to get it out of DES, which is just a whole mismanaged mess to begin with.
Well, let me ask you about this in general. Do you see this? To what extent is this underfunding? And to what extent is it just complete gross mismanagement?
It's both. It's both. Every time you turn a rock over in the place, you find out about another policy that just makes no sense. For example, last month we found out about the way the hotline treats cases that come in of potential criminal abuse. If it's a criminal abuse case, they're supposed to send it over to what's called the Office of Child Welfare Investigators, which are more like police investigators who are trained to go and see if a crime has been committed. The hotline apparently has a policy that if they can't find the address for this child who's potentially been criminally abused, they don't pass it on to the police agency, the police-like agency that could presumably have access to finding addresses. They simply stick it in a drawer. Now, I know of a case of a child that died because of that, and I haven't written about it yet because I'm still waiting for the police report on that, but it's an outrageous thing that they're doing. They're saying, well, this child's being abused, but because we can't, in our social work files, find an address for the child, we won't send it on to the police people over here, the police, the child welfare investigators who have the police access to police databases and things. We just won't send it to them. Even the OCWI people were crazed about that. On the other hand, besides mismanagement, the other problem that cannot be overlooked is just this crushing workload that they have. CPS has never been terribly well funded, and even given its lack of, given its level of funding, the funding has now been cut. We are to the point now between underfunding and just a crush of calls to the hotline to where caseworkers are working loads that are at 177% of the standard set up by the legislature of what a workload should be. They simply can't get to all the work. Add into that, you've got mismanagement above those frontline workers who just are not handling the problem well, and you've got a mess.
So if you have, and the implication to me is, if you have a workload that's heavier than is appropriate, you have to spend on the average less time on every case. It's got to squeeze out somewhere.
Well, they squeezed it out by simply saying we're going to zero by not investigating certain cases. So right now, this whole thing is in the arms of the legislature, which must do two things. It needs to create CPS as a separate agency answerable to the governor with a laser-like focus on what their mission should be. Right now, their mission is very blurred. It's protect children and it's reunify families. Well, sometimes those two are mutually exclusive, and I'm not sure that at the front lines the word has ever gotten down to them that the real job is to protect families, to protect children. So you need to sharpen up that focus. And then you need to, it'll be the governor's job to find the right director. Charles Flanagan is the director for now, and he may very well be the person that they want in there to go in and clean out that agency. And then the legislature needs to fund it appropriately. And the governor's asked for, I think, $80 or $90 million. To the legislature's credit, they have already approved some supplemental emergency funding for this year so they can get started with hiring new caseworkers. That's a very good first sign.
If they have caseloads that 177% of their own standards, what would that funding bring them up to?
If the supplemental funding?
Yes.
Oh, not enough. Nobody's even done the math. That's just to get them started. But if they get the funding that they need next year, it should bring the caseloads to an acceptable standard.
I mean, the non-examination of certain cases, I think, to everybody is just outrageous and baffling. And if you can't find an address, you drop it. That baffles the mind. I do have some sympathy for the difficulty of the agency in one respect, which is we have what a statistician refers to as a type 1, type 2 error. On the one hand, we don't want kids to get abused and we want to protect them. On the other hand, you don't want to rip children from their parents when there really is nothing seriously wrong.
Well, and that gets to the other point of what they need to fund, and that is prevention services. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the governor did not put money in her budget, in her $80 to $90 million budget request. I didn't see any money in there for preventive services to keep these kids safe so that the hotline never needs to be called in the first place.
What does preventative services look like?
It can be daycare subsidies so that mommy doesn't have to leave the baby home with the boyfriend, because mommy's always the one that works and the boyfriend is always the one who seems to stay home and babysit the kids.
Uh-huh.
It can be that kind of thing to take stress off of families. It can be parenting aids. It can be groceries. It can be all kinds of things, depending on the individual family.
Here's what fired me up, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I've understood from covering this and from what I've read, that there were some cases that have been, dismissed because or excused or set to the side because the child is now over 18. So the child was under 18 when it was filed and then had the NI sticker put on it and then not investigated. But now the kid's 18 years old. Those weren't looked into. What's being done for those kids?
I'm not aware of those
cases. Good.
But if they're 18, they're out of the system anyway. I think most of these cases involved very young children.
Okay, but I heard there was a certain number of the 6,500 files that the kids were now 18 years old and out of the system.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing you can do for them if they're out of
them.
The system unless you want to bring Adult Protective Services in.
Ugh, I can just imagine. My heart breaks for those kids.
Yeah.
They went through the system.
The job of a caseworker, it's such a tough job because it's very easy for me to sit here on the back end and when things go wrong, figure out where they went wrong. But we need to give these caseworkers the resources to be able to do the job the best they can. Know that 82% of the cases, the hotline calls that come in, are calls of neglect. They are not children that are being criminally abused. They may be criminally neglected, but they're not kids that somebody's setting out to kill or that will likely end up dead. They are cases where kids need a little help, where families need a little help.
And mostly really young kids.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we don't know the ages because CPS protects all that kind of information. But if we could get more prevention money in there, we can set aside many of those cases, allowing caseworkers to deal with the cases of the ones that we're all really afraid about, where children end up beaten to death and starved to death and burned to death and all the awful things that happen to kids in this state. Those are the ones we want those caseworkers to be able to focus on because those are the ones so desperately in need of saving.
What do your instincts tell you? Do you think the legislature is going to deal with this?
I think they have to. I think that the public is outraged about what's gone on here. Finally, people are paying attention and demanding answers, and this is an election year. And I would hope even beyond that as a reason for why they will do this, that it strikes their hearts as well, that we're just not doing the job for these kids, and we've got to do it.
Well, I think this is what we'll see. You'll see funding for this. In my eyes, you're going to see funding for this. You're going to see this taken care of because who's going to vote against it?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Is you could write a bill on a napkin with a crayon and it would be voted for because it is the CPS, the Child Protection Bill.
Well, but I don't think that that's entirely true. Not unless there's a commitment to changing the agency, and that's where the governor comes in, and she has decided to dismantle CPS, create a new office, which I think has a terrible name. It's Child Safety and Family, Safety and Family something or other.
Exactly,
services.
Exactly, right.
It's some weird name. But anyway, she is talking about taking it down to the bone, to the foundation, and rebuilding it. And I think legislators ought to be able to get behind that because it's not just putting good money after bad into a previously mismanaged agency. We're starting over. We're going to do it right. And yes, I believe they're going to do it.
I agree. I think apropos the kind of distinction I made at the beginning of the show, I think this, unlike HB 2305, which is to people obscure and one step removed from reality, you sort of have to have a certain level of political sophistication to get what's going on there. I think this is an issue that hits people where they live. They get it. They see kids who are being neglected and the state is not doing anything about it, and they should. And I think people grab that instinctively, and woe to the legislature. To me, however, the issue may come down to, well, all right, there'll be more funding, but the issue will probably come down to at what level and will it be enough?
Well, that's the question.
And we don't want to see Christmas train. We don't want to see any adding on to anything. Just get this fixed. Work on CPS.
Yeah. If they could do that this session, this will, in my view, have been a successful session. And I'll give them all the credit in the world. Might kill me, but I will.
I think you do it. I think you do it. Lori Roberts, always a treat to have you here. Thank you so much for bringing your expertise to both HB 2305 and the debacle that was CPS. We want to thank Michelle Reagan as well. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for spending some time with us. It's Mike O'Neill, Mike Russell, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
It's going to kill them to give them all that money, though.